Hello and welcome to the Unmissables podcast, the weekly gallop through the world of film a bit, books, hardly ever, music?
Never.
Well, I did review the Morrissey album kind of the other week.
Oh, did you while I was away?
Yeah. Oh, was that while you were away? Yeah.
What did you say? Good?
I said it was good. I said it was
amazing.
Good. Yeah, really good.
Brilliant
interview with him in this week's Sunday Times magazine, by the way, by Chrissy Eiley. And if you don't want to pay for it, here's a tip.
Oh.
You know you have to pay, there's a paywall on the Times.
Are you going to suggest something illegal?
No, it's totally illegal. No, totally illegal. I don't go down the Steph illegal route.
Oh.
Totally legal. ChrissyEiley.com, her own website, she puts all her interviews up there. And I don't even know if the Sunday Times realised this, because it's a big draw, you know.
Well, don't dob her up now.
Well, she mentions it in her Instagram and everything. Anyway, so the whole interview's up on her website.
What's
it's really
the
good.
Best bit about that interview?
He talks about his cats at the end, which is really the best relationships he's had in his life with his cats. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Pretty much. I mean, that shouldn't surprise you too much. It's Morrissey.
No.
Anyway, the voices you can hear are my extraordinarily glorious colleagues, Steph Seelan.
Hello.
Yes, say hello, formally. And Kay Ribeiro.
Hi.
And I'm resolved, Kay, this way. I hope you'll be pleased to know. Whatever facial expression you have on your face at any given time, I'm not going to comment on it. I'm just going to deal with it.
Because we had a little bit of a discussion about it.
Yeah, in recent weeks,
yeah.
Dear listener, sometimes we're in the middle of reviewing. I'm in the middle of reviewing something. I'm talking about something. Kay, I look at Kay, glance over to Kay, and she's got like a, you know, various different expressions. Like for me, often like scathing.
Because I'm human.
Slash.
I've explained this so many times. It is just her face.
It's just her
face.
Thanks, Steph. So I'm new resolution, pre-New Year resolution. Deal with whatever expression.
Deal with Kay's face. Yeah. We had a chat and I said, look, either I get a mask or you accept my face. Mm. Yeah, and we've decided he's going to accept it.
Going to accept the face. Anyway, more importantly, this week in the main meat of the programme / podcast, we are reviewing the new season of The Crown.
Oh,
possibly the most expensive TV show of all time.
I thought it was definitely.
Well, it is, yeah.
Oh, right.
If you add it all up, it's various ways of measuring because it's like, you know, expense per budget per episode. And I think it's about 10 million... per episode, and because there's going to be 60, this is the second tranche of 10 we're looking at today. Hope you've watched all 10, by the way.
I think I'm going to surprise you with The Crown, actually.
Oh, excellent. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, so it's going to be 60 million altogether, which is apparently...
That's like the GDP of a very small island.
Well, yeah, exactly. So we're looking at that, which is on Netflix next Friday. A Very Kardashian Holiday.
Oh, did you pick this one, Boyd, because you were desperate to do it? It's got you written all over it, really.
You know, I live my life by the Kardashians.
I know you do.
What would whatever Kardashian do is the question I pose.
Boy, you've watched an episode and you can't name a single Kardashian.
What? I know their names. Chris. They're all Chris.
Come on.
Kim.
Yep.
Chloe.
Yep.
See?
One more.
And the others. Yeah. And finally, much more seriously, Catching a Killer, which is a true crime story. On Channel 4 next Thursday, the 7th of December. Which we kind of did choose specially for you, Steph, by the way. Because we know you like a true crime.
Yeah, well. We've all got something this week. And also, there's a bit of Luton in it, so I thought that was the other reason.
Try to find things set in Luton if possible.
Have you noticed that all the Channel 4 crime things are set in Luton? 24 hours in police custody, Luton. Catching a Killer.
Did you say 23 hours in police custody?
Did I?
I thought you did. I may have got it wrong. I don't know. It sounded like
23
to me, which would be brilliant. Just 1 hour less than a full day in police custody.
Yeah, 23 hours in police custody.
In Luton. You only get 23 hours in Luton. But before we get on to any of that, our traditional early look through what the other stuff we've been watching, listening to, reading, but rarely, hardly ever reading or listening to anything. Maybe Kay's going to surprise us with her favourite recent album.
Sometimes Kay does books.
That's true. Yeah.
And you know what?
Well, I did a book.
I have done a book, so I'm going to go straight to it.
Well done.
Right. Little Fires Everywhere. It was by Celeste NG. So that was on our shortlist, I think, for one of the Unmissables Awards.
It was.
Am I right?
Book of the Year.
Yeah.
And
it's really, really good. So if you haven't read it, it's about this family in Ohio. And the central character is called Mrs. Richardson. And she's got the perfect family. Her husband's a lawyer. She's got four kids. One's like a jock. One's a cheerleader. One's like really bookish. And the fourth one's like a total black sheep of the family. Anyway, she rents out one of her apartments to an artist called Mia and her daughter Pearl. And basically, their arrival starts chipping away at Mrs. Richardson's perfect life. Mm. And so then she goes on the offensive and has devastating consequences. But it's really, really good. It's so, like, so richly woven, like, interwoven, all the stories. And when you're reading it, my first thought was, like, I can imagine this being on TV. Mm. And then afterwards, I did a bit of research, and Reese Witherspoon's actually bought the rights to this.
Wow.
With Reese, she's a canny lady.
She could be the next Big Little Lies, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. That's exactly what I'm saying, but little fires everywhere instead of lies.
Is that what it's called? Yeah. Little fires everywhere. Mm. Maybe she's only interested in buying books with little in the title.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Little House on the Prairie remake. Yeah.
Oh, that'd be good.
I don't know. That sounds good.
Yeah, it was really good. So I'd give that 4 stars.
What's it called again?
Little Fires Everywhere by Celeste NG.
NG. Oh, is that how you pronounce it? The name's literally NG, isn't it?
Well, how else are you going to say it?
I don't know.
How is it?
I didn't want to say it. I tried saying it phonetically and it didn't sound too good.
Okay.
So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on.
Moving on swiftly, I'd say.
Is it the letters N and G?
Yes.
Yeah, that's why I said
Celeste,
it.
Celeste.
Yeah.
That's what I would probably say, Celeste.
Yeah, me too, but you know, it came out right. We'll
I think I once had a dentist called Susan NG. Maybe all this time I've been calling her wrong.
Okay. Maybe she's the writer's sister.
Get in touch.
Maybe she's the writer's sister.
Perhaps.
I feel we should probably
draw a veil
over this.
Is this another Cillian Killian situation?
Worse.
Right, okay.
Every week we're cretinous, don't have to say the names. I've been watching The A Word. Have you been watching The A Word, guys?
Yes. Kind of, yes.
I've watched it all now. I did a semi-binge.
What does that mean?
Well, I'm up to... you've watched all six, have you?
Yeah.
Ah, I haven't watched all six, so I think I watched four.
Yeah, it's really good. BBC,
what's
Tuesdays, 9 o'clock.
Shall we just interrupt already? The episode where it begins with a video that made.
That is episode 5, I think.
Right, I've seen that one. That's really good. Very clever. I like the video that she made of him. So she makes a home video kind of to show what his behaviours, and the dad particularly is like shocked and appalled by that.
Yeah, so Nicola does it to show GPs to kind of educate them. And because, you know, Paul Lee Ingleby has a real problem with it this series. Yeah. He can't get his head around Joe's autism, or he just struggles with it. Mm. And so he sees this video, and obviously everything is true in the video, but he just really struggles with the fact that that's how other people are going to see Joe, and he just really kicks off. Episode 6 is brilliant because it's there's a school play at Joe's school, obviously, end of year term play, and he's got a kind of a recital, and so all the family gather together, and loads of questions are answered because, like, there's, will Alison and Paul find a way back? Their relationship's in real difficulty.
Yeah.
Nicola and
is
what's the brother
and
called?
Paul? Oh yeah, it's you, Nicola, the couple that was split.
The couple that have split, that's Nicola and Eddie.
Right.
And so will they reunite? Will Becky go to university? Yeah, all these questions are answered. Will Joe even be able to get, like, complete the recital? It's really tense and emotionally gripping. I have to say, this series, the highlight for me has been Morris's relationship. You know Christopher Eccleston's character with, what's her chops?
That music teacher.
Yeah, Louise, in real life.
Pookie Quesnel.
Why can I not talk? In real life, Pookie.
Pookie, yes. Yeah. Yes, Pookie's character is very good,
His relationship is so... Yeah, because he's so, like, emotionally stunted himself. Mm. It's like a 15-year-old boy trying to communicate with her.
Yeah.
And so the last episode is... And it's a tearjerker.
You know, did I tell you when I'm sure I did. Pookie Quesnel and Chris Felton have known each other in real life for decades.
Really?
Yeah, they first worked together about 30 years ago. Yeah. And in the launch that I hosted... They talked about how, I think, he made a play for her or something, back 30 years ago or something. It's incredible,
God.
Yeah. So they've like been mates for all that time.
Oh, no, I think that is... Did you like that strand of it?
Yeah, it's great. Mm. Brilliant.
It's really good. Anyway, so A Word fans, you'll love that. That's BBC Tuesday at 9 o'clock. And then finally, I went to a screening of Delicious.
Oh, you've been busy.
Sky One drama with Dawn French.
Oh, nice.
Today I went, I can't say too much, it's embargoed, but it's back for a second series. Watch the first episode, it's just as good as the first. Dawn French's character, Gina, is working together with England's ex-wife. Sam, who's played by Amelia Fox.
Yes.
And they're having to run a hotel and restaurant together. So it's all the difficulties of that. But it is really...
And is the son in it? Is he pop-up Kay?
No.
Yeah.
He didn't in that first episode.
It's not it.
Not in that first episode.
You know, must know that the son that Kay has very strong feelings for.
No.
Don't out me. He's quite young, I think.
I think he's that young.
Is he older than Bieber?
I think he's in his 20s. Yeah, right. 20s.
Yeah, hopefully he's he's older than Bieber. Fine. He wasn't in it, but I think he will be in the series.
He's got to be in it, surely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
what's the actor's name?
Rory someone, I think.
It's a Google.
While you regale us, Steph, with KK carries on regaling us, I'm going to look
him
up.
Tell you something interesting, because while Delicious is back for a second series, I went to a Sky launch and found out there's loads of other things that we like coming back.
Oh, great.
Numero uno.
Tin Star.
Yes, Tin Star. Second series
is
coming
back. Welcome back, Tim. Crazy Tim Roth.
Number two, Bounty Hunters.
Oh, I didn't watch that.
Yeah, you did. We reviewed it, didn't you? Jack Whitehall. Oh, God. It was the week she was off. Oh, dear. Tumbleweed. Okay, well, Boyd and I watched it.
That's really good, yeah.
Yeah, so that's back, which is fantastic. Riviera.
I'm really surprised Riviera came back because we didn't like it.
Yeah, I think we were all surprised.
No, I was surprised.
But wasn't there that whole thing where the writers distanced themselves from it?
Yes, correct.
They were not happy with it.
I don't think anyone was happy with it.
But then my question is then who's writing the second season?
I think the original originators, the OGs, they backed out. So they've kind of disowned it pretty much. I mean, I don't know if the word disowned is a strong word. So other people came in, I presume they're carrying on working on it now. Rory O'Connor, there he is, holding up pictures of Kay.
The name of your beloved.
That's the little picture of you, Steph.
Oh, yeah, rugged. Yeah.
He's a rugged chap who is the son in Delicious, and he'll be back later, and Kay has strong feelings for him. Anyway, carry on.
Nice. These are the other shows that come back, the second series. And also there's going to be the Lenny James drama with... her name is now...
Saran Jones?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, which is coming back. Well, it's not coming back, it's coming for the first time.
Did they mention the Noel Clark one? So there's a Noel Clark thing they're filming at the moment. I think that's exciting.
And the Benedict Cumberbatch drama.
Oh, yeah.
What new Benedict Cumberbatch drama?
The Benedict Cumberbatch drama is very... That's the one when I gave him the highly prestigious...
Unmissables Award.
I had to go to a country house in the middle of the country where he was filming this show called Melrose, which is based on a 5-novel series called the Patrick Melrose novels by Edward St. Aubin.
They are
incredible books. I love these books.
Oh, I remember. Sorry, I do remember.
About this kind of outlandish playboy with massive issues. The biggest issues you can possibly have. And it's an incredible role.
What are the biggest issues you can possibly have? Family issues, drugs, substance abuse, rock and roll.
Abuse, everything.
Oh, God. Yeah, okay, everything. Fine.
You name it, he's got it. There's an issue. Oh, and it's being adapted by David Nichols of One Day fame. Yeah, so it's got the credentials of the show are incredible. So, yeah, that's that. They showed a clip from, I think there was a little trailer, wasn't there?
Yeah, that
they put out. Yeah, very exciting.
There's a lot of good stuff coming. I mean, this isn't an advert for Sky, but there's a lot of good stuff coming next week.
But, you know, if Sky want to put an advert and pay us to sponsor the thing, then we're open to it.
I'm thinking if Tin Star's back, why can't they invite us on a road trip there?
Yeah, you know, Tin Star was a sponsor of our sister brother podcast Empire. Empire that when
what?
Tin Star came out.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding.
Are you absolutely kidding me? We spent about 15 hours talking about Tin Star and they didn't think to come to us.
We're a fledgling. They've been going around for 10 years.
They should support the underdog.
You've gone a bit straight.
Listen,
you've gone a bit
straight. Calm down.
I've had a falling out with Tin Star. What's happened?
Wow. You went a bit Tim Roth in Tin Star then.
Well, he doesn't want to encounter me now because I'm angry.
The little psycho kid in it.
Yeah. Whitey, he's my favourite.
Oh, God.
Moving on.
Right.
Steph, would you like to tell us what you've been doing?
Of course I would.
In your life.
Right. Okay, so because our Undirty John told us about Dirty John, I binged Dirty John.
So this is John, our guru, producer, editor. Advised us all to listen to Dirty John, the podcast series, it didn't win. It ran up in the Heat Unmissable Podcast Theory Award. Carry on.
But I've now listened to it all and I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I can't wait for what they're going to do next. Yeah. Really good. Obviously that's still available. How many episodes? Is it 6 episodes?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And then I had to just look up loads of pictures afterwards. It was amazing. I started watching Godless. Which I really like. So Godless on Netflix with Jack O'Connell Lady Mary.
Michelle Dockery.
And I can confirm that you are absolutely correct. Her accent is incredible.
Incredible, isn't it?
But Jack, for me, is amazing in this.
You know, there's a whole controversy about this programme now.
What is the controversy about it?
It blew up over the weekend, I believe, on social media, Twitter, and probably someone wrote an article. So someone pointed out, Godless, as... is partly about, but not completely, which is why I feel the controversy is slightly misleading.
So this is the modern,
the Western. This is the Western where all the women had previously run the town because all the men were killed.
So part of the thing is setting is in a town with women.
Yeah.
Right. So with the male invaders come in, and the Jack O'Connor character has to stay there to try and escape from the clutches of his evil mentor who's after him because he's betrayed him. So the part of the setting is this town of women only. And so the controversy that has exploded, I think it's fair to say, by some feminist writers on this show is that something like, I think someone counted the lines of dialogue in the first episode and said 70% are spoken by the men and only 30% are spoken by the women. And then other people have gone, right, that's it, I'm out. You know, this is a man's view, because it's written by Scott Frank, who is a man, and a view of this world run by women. So it was kind of set up partly as a feminist Western, and people are saying, well, actually, the whole thing is seen through a man's point of view.
Right. I would agree the fact that it's billed as about a town that is run by women, you absolutely don't get that. Would you agree? Because there are a lot of men in it.
But this is what I was going to say, because it's kind of us. It's kind of, it's been billed as, Netflix hasn't really. And I don't I don't remember reading the pre-publicity for it or interviews with Scott Frank and Steven Soderbergh as a producer, emphasising that point anyway. It's a thing that people have mentioned. Do you know what I mean? I don't think it's really about that. I think it's about these characters specifically. So I mean, who am I? I didn't feel it's a problem.
You're Boyd Hilton, and it counts what you say. So you tell us.
But as a lady, you have more.
Well, I just felt that it was an incorrect. As I'm saying, it's incorrectly billed. It's not, because you expect it. Just what I expected was that it was going to just be the cast were all going to be women, and Jack was probably going to be like
But I never indicated that in my review.
You didn't, but I do think that's exactly what I thought it was going to be. And they do show points where the women are dominant. There's a point where one of the women says, you know, I can draw faster than you, and to the sheriff, and she can. And but I don't think, I can understand why people might have an issue with it. But again, we don't know the origin of billing it as a
no.
a kind of feminist Western type thing. Right, exactly, it's not that.
No. Indeed.
But I really liked it. Good. It was really good.
How many stars did you give it?
I'm episode 4. I think it's just kind of a solid 4-star.
Mm.
It's good. It's pretty good. And she is.
Have you finished it? Have you finished it?
I did. I'm up to episode 4.
Oh, well, you said that. Yeah. Does that mean Kay is laughing because I didn't listen to what
you
said?
You didn't listen.
I did, but then I remembered, and now I regret even asking you.
Okay. And I want to talk about my favourite historian, Lucy Worsley.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Do you love her? As much as I do.
I don't think
as
much as
you do. Are
you
in love with her?
No.
So I rewatched something that I would like to bring everyone's attention to. So it's a 3-part thing. It's on BBC iPlayer, and it is called she does a series called A Very British Murder, and it's all about the origins of murder in Britain, obviously.
It surprises me you watch this.
But it's absolutely brilliant, and I thought, I've been dying to you know, when you hear something so good and also so educational, you want to rewatch it again. I rewatched it, and it's just got so many good facts.
Now, what do you mean a history of murder?
Okay. Like, so it's kind of
This is the first murder.
It goes back to like the first murders that people became fascinated with and were in the papers, and when murder really turned scandalous.
Jack the Ripper.
Yeah, it does. It does mention a bit of that, but it's like but you need to watch the whole thing.
To think of an
it is kind of that, and then it takes you all the way through, and it's got a really big bit about Agatha Christie. So it goes to ages. So you would really enjoy
it. Now she's excited.
But the great thing about Lucy is that she gives you such good facts. So the phrase where you go, you know, the phrase "sweet fa," okay, which we all think means something. Okay, a rude word.
Football
okay.
Association.
Yeah, but it doesn't. It comes from basically a little young girl called Fanny Adams, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Sweet Fanny Adams.
And she was chopped up into a million pieces.
A million?
And then, she was chopped up. And then basically the Navy were given rations of food, right?
Which that was Fanny Adams.
Which were just in tins, which were little chunks of meat. And they used to say that they didn't have anything to eat. They just had sweet F.A., sweet Fanny Adams, referring to her being chopped up into little bits that they're getting in tins, which they didn't actually obviously get her. They're just tins of meat. But isn't that a great fact origin story about murder?
Good fact.
Yeah, that's
anyway,
good
three
fact.
Parts. You should watch
What
this
made
great.
You suddenly decide to watch that again?
Because she loves murder.
I know, but
did you not know her?
You're running out of murder.
She hasn't done it. I'm waiting for her to do another something else. I love
fascinated by
does.
The way your mind
and
works.
I can just keep watching her.
Yeah, but oh, and I also I thought I haven't mentioned it on here, and
yeah, no, good.
I'll give it a refresh.
It's a good service.
It's good, great service.
Thanks, Kay.
Anything else?
Yeah, I have, but do you want me to go into it?
Yeah,
because
go on.
One of the right. So
what?
Okay, the other thing I watch is Lock Up State Prisons, because me and my friends.
Oh, you've
got to
mention that. Yeah, you and your pod,
me and my
pod
friends
listener,
at Little
person on the ground.
We watch. Right. I thought it was a new series, not a new series, from 2012, but it is actually amazing because, so Lock Up State Prisons, obviously about American prisons, and oh my God, they actually give the prisoners cameras of their own.
Right.
And they just, I mean, these people are just mad. They just let loose. And it's talking about...
For what purpose?
I mean, and are you talking about video cameras?
To make
or
a documentary
like,
for Netflix.
Yeah. No, I wasn't sure if it's like photography camera. Like a,
oh, no, it's what, for, the, no, for, the doc, no, for
like,
this program.
Like filming yeah, themselves, series, talking yeah. about like what happens in prison. And there's people actually saying, yeah, when the new people come in, yeah, we steal all their commissary. And it's just, it's a fascinating insight into how awful people are in prison.
Oh, God.
I know. It's good,
interesting.
Though.
Interesting.
I liked it. And very then I'm good. Just going to mention one more thing.
Yeah.
On Discovery Channel, there's a new show which the wonderful Sheldon, who I can't remember his name's in real life, Sheldon from The Big Bang. What is his name as an actor? Jim. Just right. Okay. Jim... I'll talk about it while someone looks it up.
Jim Robinson.
No.
Oh my God. Jimmy Tarbuck.
No. Right. Stop. Boyd's on the Google.
Jim
anyway,
Bowen.
It's a new show on Discovery.
Jim Parsons,
which he introduces and he narrates, called First in Human, and it's all about Building 10 in this hospital, which is like the biggest hospital for research for terrible terminal diseases. And it's all about all the people that go in are the first in human trials for certain things that they're going to do. Like there's a lot of immunology and stuff. And it is absolutely fascinating. The first episode is an hour and a half. But it is honestly, it's incredible. There's a man, sorry, I was going to be a bit sad, but there's a man who's had cancer 3 times and he's going to have this revolutionary treatment. And they're basically... It's what it says on the tin. It's first in human trials, and it's fascinating. You should watch it, and it will make you feel very clever.
Wow!
I know.
An epic array of recommendations from Steph this week. I mean, that's enough. Really, we could just stop there.
Let's stop
and not review these meaty things. But we have all.
But hey,
what?
Hold on a minute, Boyd.
Oh, you haven't finished.
You?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Forgot about me. I was literally going to move on to the meat.
Don't forget about you, because you've been.
I'm gonna
have to. Busy. You've been in Cologne. You've been watching the Arsenal.
Kay right now, by the way, is rubbing my arm. Not Steph is rubbing my arm.
I'm rubbing.
Oh, it's almost like we're interchangeable.
Oh.
Anyway, what have you been watching, Boyd?
Thanks, Kay. Steph. Okay, Steph. Steph K. I've been watching, tonight, as we speak tonight, it's Monday. We're recording on Monday, 20 to 4.
Mm-hmm.
And tonight I'm hosting a screening of Hard Sun, which is the new BBC One drama created by Neil Cross of Luther fame.
Oh, this is going to be good.
Luther.
Is Luther over for good?
No, it's coming back.
It definitely is.
Yeah, I believe they've confirmed that, yeah.
Really? Yes. When is it coming back?
I don't know. I haven't got the date. Oh. They haven't told me the date. I don't think they've filmed it yet, but I think it's coming back.
Okay.
But this is a pre-apocalyptic, crime drama, which means it's set in a world before it's about to die in 5 years' time. The world's about to end in 5 years, and this is a crime drama about what effect does that have on society?
A crime drama about...
Think about that for a minute.
The world's going to end in 5 years.
Yep.
Okay. Right.
Very interesting. And I've seen the first episode, which screens tonight, and it's fascinating. But I think it probably...
Who's in it?
Agnes Dean.
Oh.
Yes.
Model,
in a very good...
Model turned Scientologist turned actress.
Yes.
Okay.
And she's really good in it, I have to say. She's absolutely excellent.
Mm.
As the kind
what does
of
she play?
Female, she's a detective. She's the female, main female detective alongside Jim Sturgis as the male detective. And they kind of have a slightly clashing relationship because he's a bit dodgy.
He is a bit dodgy, yeah. Is it a bit Blade Runner-y?
It's very sleek and slick and visually dazzling. And there's a lot of like fire and violence and blood. Brimstone. There's a little bit of brimstone. It's really good. It's really interesting. Anyway, I'll review that in full, I'm sure, when it trundles around next year. It's not until 2018, so, you know.
I don't think I like the sound of the...
Open mind, shall we?
No, I... Yeah, okay.
All right. You
worried about the D word?
Mind.
I am a little bit.
Yeah, I thought you were.
And the only other thing I was going to quickly mention, I'm doing a quick stuff I've watched this week.
Okay,
thing,
fine.
Because on this film called Beach Rats came out in the cinemas on Friday. And it's
Beach Rats.
It's an American indie film.
Mm.
And it's brilliant. And we reviewed it in Heat Magazine. I want to mention, you know Curzon Home Video?
Mm.
The brilliant thing, so any film that's distributed by Curzon, so it's in cinema, but you can watch it on your television if you get the Curzon, again, they're not paying me, the Curzon home video app.
What do you mean?
The app. What I mean is you can download the app on your phone or whatever, rent the film to watch. It costs like a tenner.
Not everyone knows what Curzon is.
Curzon is the film. They have cinemas.
Fancy art house cinemas.
It's an art house company.
But not everyone might know.
That's a good point. I'm glad you mentioned it. I'm glad we explained it.
She's a pog.
It's a fancy...
You're a person on the ground,
It's a fancy cinema.
It's a fancy schmancy.
One of those cinemas where you can take a glass of wine in.
Correct.
And people used to be able to smoke in there, didn't they? It was outrageous.
What did you mean?
To be fair, everyone was allowed to smoke inside at that point. Yeah, it wasn't just.
But in the Curzon, they were allowed to smoke in for longer. Anyway, you used to take wine in and it was all fancy.
You're making that up.
We've gone down a hole.
You're making it up.
It's the Curzon extra smoking rule.
I honestly think they had some sort of extension.
Well, if you say so. What I do know is they've got a bloody app where you can watch.
Sorry, back to the app.
Yeah,
right.
You can watch stuff that's out in their cinemas. Not everything, but like this film, for example. In the privacy of your own life. You don't want to schlep out. If you live in, you know, the wilds of somewhere
or other. Right, sorry. I really don't understand how this works. So you have to... Hold on.
I'm glad I brought it up now.
But I think it's important. So are you saying you download this app and then you pay the cost of what it would cost for you to go to that Curzon cinema to watch that film and you watch it at home?
Yeah, you're like renting. You know what? You can rent a film on iTunes. It's the equivalent of that. It's their own unique... It's their own kind of version of iTunes and you can watch. Okay. But they've got films out now that are on in cinemas. Available to watch at home.
So
now,
you
if you're near a Curzon
this
cinema...
This is a big thing. You can watch cinema...
I didn't think it was as big as it is.
It is big, because you can watch films that are only available in Curzon cinemas in your home.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
I know, it's brilliant. Yeah, it's really good. Yeah. So...
So how much do they cost?
I think it's like a tenner, like $9.99, I think. But don't blame me if it's either slightly more or slightly less.
But then
I haven't double-checked.
You have to bring your own
Boyd
snacks.
Will make up the difference,
Pops. Shut the fuck up.
No, that's really good.
Yeah.
That is really good.
I'm amazed by how... I think both me and John, who's sitting there looking at you slightly askance, are surprised.
I think we should do a standalone podcast just on this Curzon
app. Well, I mean, we mentioned it so much that, frankly, they should be also sponsoring us as well as Sky.
You need to be providing the pogs with a service, because otherwise they might be like, what's Curzon? How do you do it? Does it cost me money?
I think they can be left in no doubt about what Curzon is.
Okay. But you,
and a lot of modern TVs, like, and I'm going to name another another brand, Samsung. Like my Samsung TV, as part of the thing, you know, we go to the apps page. It's there. Curzon Cinema is part of on the home screen. Yeah,
that's
a lot.
Fancy.
So check your TV. That's the first thing.
It won't be on my
can
TV.
Can I just tell you what I'm going to do? I'm going to test this out for next
test
week
it out.
Because I, as a slight simpleton on these things, I am going to test it out
you
for next
what?
week.
No, I'm a Luddite as well.
The problem is, you're so used to downloading films your own way, and that's all I'll say about it. You haven't even thought of the fact there's a way of doing it above
legally,
board.
I don't know. Well, now you've said above board, okay?
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a go.
Yeah. Anyway, all I wanted to say about it is you can watch it. It's Beach Rats. It's one of the best indie, low-budget films I've seen this year. And the guy who's in it is set in Brooklyn. Near what's the beach?
Dumbo?
Bit? No, the famous where all the fun fair is and everything. I forgot the name
Coney Island.
Coney Island, thank you. It's set in and around Coney Island. They go and hang out, him and his teenage mates, and they're all, you know, they're kind of doofuses basically. But he's secretly attracted to men. And when he's at home, he goes on the internet and finds men. But his whole community and his family and everyone are completely homophobic.
Secret life.
So it's really interesting. But he is played, this Brooklynite, teenage dude, is played by a British bloke from Walthamstow called Harris Dickinson, who is phenomenal in it.
Why? Like, why did they just get, why? I mean, he was the best one.
He's got the look, he's like, you know, he's got an incredibly striking face, he's just really charismatic figure.
Wow.
And he is brilliant in it. And it's so
future
that's
star?
Big star. Huge star right now, Harris Dickinson. So that's Beach Rats on the Curzon Home Cinema.
Don't bring it up again.
Service that exists.
I'm just saying, not everyone knows what the Curzon is.
We hear what you're saying.
Okay.
One word. Meat.
We hear what you're saying.
Is that all you've been doing? Is that all you've seen?
No, he said it now. He's
right,
done.
Okay.
Kay, I think, wants us to move on.
Okay, we can move
meat.
On.
I get the sincere feeling.
Let's get to the meat. Come on.
That she's had enough. Particularly of you talking about Curzon Home Cinema.
Okay, that's the last thing I'm going to say about Curzon until next week.
Oh!
Yeah, when she tries it out.
Oh, yeah, try it out.
Try it out.
Let's move on to The Crown. Season 2 of the phenomenally popular, well, we assume it is, because Netflix doesn't tell anyone how many people watch their programmes, but Season 1 was a huge kind of, you know, a lot of attention paid to it when it came out last year. And now Season 2 is arriving this Friday, December the 8th. It was, in fact, next Friday, December the 8th. 10 episodes. And it covers, this series covers the period from When Winston Churchill was replaced by Anton Eden at the end of Series 1. Did you watch Series 1 in full, you two?
Right.
No, I didn't.
If you remember, Cut Pogs and regular listeners, cast their mind back, I sort of was a bit like, I think it's too much hype. I think you and I both thought much hype. And so I watched maybe 2-3 episodes of the first season and I was like, it's too hyped. This is not, I don't really like it.
Right. Well, this series ends with, I wasn't asking, you know.
You didn't care.
I wasn't asking your opinion at that point.
Well, I needed to set people up.
That
wouldn't
sound snotty. I was just checking whether you're up to date with what's...
Do you want me to leave? Do you want me to go?
Please stay. Right. Because I am interested in your opinion when we come to it.
I know. I'll be quiet.
Sounded really rude. Apologies. But I just wanted to explain where we're up to. So the series one ended with Winston Churchill being replaced by Anthony Eden as Prime Minister, Kay. Mm. And it was the start of the very famous Suez Crisis, which I'm sure you spend most waking hours thinking about, which is there was a dispute with the Egyptian president. And then the Queen's been married 10 years to Philip. And as episode one begins, there are issues in their marriage.
As
is quite clear from the first episode.
He's been playing away.
Well, there are allusions. There are allusions to the fact that the Duke of Edinburgh, played of course by Matt Smith, the Queen played by Claire Foy, he's been playing away. And across these 10 episodes, we cover the events up to the Profumo scandal in the early 60s, which was an incredibly legendary sex scandal involving Tory MPs and stuff, and the resignation of the then Prime Minister Harold Macmillan. We also meet John F. Kennedy, played by Michael C. Hall, and Jackie Kennedy, played by Jodie Balfour. And then we meet the Queen's sister, Princess Margaret, who's my favourite character.
Oh, yeah, I'm on board.
Preemptively, played by Vanessa Kirby. She falls in love with Anthony Armstrong Jones, society photographer, played by Matthew Good. So that's kind of what the ground we cover. And then also, I think, interestingly, in the latter half of this series, so we should say how much of it we've watched probably, but in the latter half of this series, Prince Charles, the boy, is kind of growing up.
Right.
And one of the big themes of it is his rocky relationship, to say the least, with his dad, with Prince Philip. I think that's really interesting that, you know, you kind of... The poor boy, Prince Philip's not that bothered about, not that interested, and explains quite a lot about what they're saying psychologically is behind, you know, how Prince Charles turned out, I feel, in many ways. Mm. So, how much have we watched? Because it's 10 episodes, we, you know, you may well have watched only one episode, that's fine.
I have only watched one episode,
good.
And I haven't watched the first series. I've got a question. So, what is this based on?
Oh, that's a good question.
Her diaries, isn't it?
No.
I thought you said it was her
No, it's Peter Morgan wrote it and created it, and he wrote a play called, I think it was called The Audience, which starred Dame Helen Mirren on the London stage. I think someone else played her on the American, on Broadway. But the play, The Audience, was kind of, every scene was the Queen talking to her Prime Minister. So, you know, every week, so the basis of it is every week the Queen meets the Prime Minister.
Which happens now.
Which happens.
Oh my God, you know what I was getting confused with? Victoria. Sorry, because that is based on her diaries.
Yes. Funnily enough,
brain engaged.
Yeah, I was going to say the Queen hasn't written.
I said that, I thought surely I'd have heard about this before if she'd written.
Also, I was quite amazed that the Queen would allow her daughter to be used.
While she's still here.
Yeah, that would be a revelation. Yeah. Sadly, we don't. If the Queen has kept her diaries, we haven't read them.
Well, this is the other thing I was going to say, because in the first episode, she's there like writing in her diary, and I was quite intrigued by that, thinking, God, I wonder if the Queen actually does.
Well, she may well do, but we haven't read them, and nor has Peter Morgan, the creator. So the play was pretty much solidly her meeting her prime ministers, and I think that like it covered all of them, all the prime ministers she'd met, maybe 10 or however many there were, and that was it. And this kind of lavish expansion of that was the basis of this. Peter Morgan's written this whole series,
and just from his imagination, not based on anything. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Well, obviously, it's all based on historical records, so all the facts are kept to, you know, sort of the chronology, the prime ministers, you know, and but of course, that's a good point. Mm. The scenes where we're seeing her behind the closed doors,
this is what,
interacting with her husband and her kids and their private lives. That's all, the invention of Peter Morgan, the scriptwriter.
This is what I wanted to get to, because obviously the facts are the facts.
Yes.
But the juicy, the thing that are actually intriguing and interesting are the stuff that I wanted to know how much, you know, veracity there was to them.
Like,
is
this question. Well,
because, you know, obviously we're invested in this as a drama, but you want to feel that some truth, you know, you're gleaning some information about the royal family, but I wanted to know if it was all just, you
conjecture.
Know. Yeah.
Well, it's a huge question. I think what you can say is Peter Morgan, this is what he does. So Peter Morgan also wrote Frost Nixon, you know, the play based on the real meeting.
Which was then made into a film.
He specialises in big, true historical stories of powerful people and honing them into fictional dramas. Mm. And I don't think any makes any pretense to the fact that he's invented all of the stuff that's happening behind closed doors that no one could possibly know about, particularly in this situation with the Queen. It's all invented. But I guess it is a case of do you buy into the fact that do you believe everything that he's saying that he's making up but went on behind closed doors? Yeah, I mean it's a big question.
But I don't. I think because as you rightly say, so much of what you see is grounded in historical fact,
sure.
Things that actually happened,
sure.
Newspaper headlines.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's too outrageous the kind of the stuff that goes on behind
sure.
the scenes because it's human reaction.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's outrageous, but it's definitely
for me. It's more the relationship between Philip and her, for example, or the intimate relationships.
Well,
so that's what I'm.
Well, the other thing I was going to say, sorry, just to not defend him, but to explain, I think, is that he has done a huge amount of research, so he would have spoken to
exactly
lots
to all the people around,
both anonymously and on the record, behind as research. You know, so he's
right.
You know, he'll have spoken to, you know, for example, I think he's spoken to some of the prime ministers that end up in the play. I mean, I don't know if fact, but certainly a lot of people who've written reams and reams of books about the Queen and, you know, have kind of...
Yeah.
So there's definitely a certain
Paul
amount...
Paul Burrell, he's been on the phone.
Right, yeah. There's a certain amount of research which could... But having said that, I don't think anyone... Like, there are scenes, aren't there? For example, in episode one, where it's the Queen and Prince Philip in their bedroom, in the royal bedroom, talking about the relationship. Now, no one, I don't think he's spoken to Prince Philip or the Queen. So that is complete fiction that he has invented, saying, well, their marriage went through a rocky period. That, I'm sure, is confirmed.
Yes.
But what they're saying to each other and what they're dealing with it, that's all complete fiction.
Yeah, so it's that minute detail, but based on a fact that then he did go off on a tour. You know, so that's what...
Right.
Would you like to know what I...
Now I would.
Okay.
And I always did want to know what you think.
Okay,
I should not have said I didn't ever want to know what
you think.
No,
that's fine,
earlier.
Boys.
Yeah, but what do you think? Yeah.
Well, I've done a massive turnaround with this series because I really thought the first series was hyped and it just wasn't and everyone said it was amazing. I was like, I just don't think it is. I watched this first episode and I was so gripped, I watched 4 more.
Wow.
I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
I really, really liked it. And I'm not sure why, although I don't know. Maybe it's because we've had the announcement about Harry and Meghan and I'm feeling incredibly royalist at the moment. Harry and Meghan.
Who?
Prince
oh.
Harry
I'm
and Meghan.
Joking.
Oh,
I'm joking.
Don't start him up with this.
Okay.
I just can't
but obviously,
deal with it.
And I love the royals. And I was really surprised I didn't love the first series, but I think I'm going to go back and watch it, because I think... Oh, God, this is such a U-turn, but I think Claire Foy is, like, literally the most amazing actress ever now.
Did
I
you
always
slag her off
it.
Before?
No, right.
Yeah.
Claire Foy, I loved,
yeah.
right? But I loved her in, like, Little Dorrit. I didn't love the whole The Crown as
right.
a show.
No.
But now, she's just so amazing in this, and her emotional response, maybe it's because the premise of this is that... Maybe it's because what?
I'm a Londoner. Sorry.
Boyd's trying to get a serious review about
yeah.
Claire Foy.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because I like this whole, the difficulty in her marriage.
You like the difficulty in
no,
her marriage?
No, I like
yeah.
the whole
it's
emotional
yeah.
tension.
No, I agree, yeah.
And it's...
Yeah.
Really good
no, I know
and I
mean.
Can see why, because he goes on tour, okay? Did you see the bit where basically he's playing around with some penguins? Now, okay, he's in Antarctica. That's
my
why
God,
it's cost
minute.
So much
can we
money.
Just clarify, what kind of playing around?
Like cuddling them and stuff. And sending back videos of playing with penguins. Not dodgy playing with penguins. I'm not advocating.
What are you accusing Prince Philip of?
Yeah.
I mean, it's bad enough he was playing around with, allegedly...
Ballerina.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty... damning stuff, isn't it, about him?
It is, actually. It makes him look like a right dick. It does. I was
grasping for the words and make him look like a right dick.
It
kind of does.
But it does.
Okay.
It makes
but
him
I can
look
see,
like a cad.
I feel you've got issues, as have I, because I have. I have issues with all the conjecture that this series necessarily involves. Is that fair?
Yeah.
To you?
I find that hard. I mean, like... Obviously, no one's going to know what goes on in the bedroom. And frankly, I don't want to know what goes on the bedroom between Queen Elizabeth
especially
and
Especially not involving penguins.
Yeah, no penguin action.
No, that was a video.
I know, I'm joking, yeah.
So I think that does take away from my enjoyment a little bit because I want to believe fully what I'm watching.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I think it's one of these things, like, there's nothing wrong with it. It is really good. It's incredibly lavish. It's beautifully shot. You know, Matt and Claire are brilliant in it. I'm just not as bowled over as I think I'm meant to
but
be by it.
That's what I felt like.
I think the thing that's going to save it for me is Princess Margaret.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I think you should watch some more.
Yeah.
No, but Margaret, I love. She's
Margaret.
My favorite.
Margaret
she's
is incredible.
Like, yeah. I'm not saying I didn't enjoy it. It's you know, I enjoyed it, but I just for all the talk of how much it's worth, for all of the, as you say, the hype that goes around it, I was expecting something a bit more.
Yeah.
No, fair enough. I mean, it is. I think I'm not a huge fan of the first series either. Like
right.
Like
I
you.
Just well, I think gave partly up.
I didn't give up, but there's some brilliant stuff in there. There's a brilliant Winston Churchill. Was fantastic and fascinating. There's a brilliant scene right in, I think it's in the penultimate episode or last episode where he's being painted, which did happen by a legendary painter, and that conversation is brilliantly done. Mm. And I like all the way through in this, it's just great to see, you know, John F. Kennedy, they're welcomed by the how was welcomed by the Queen, and because of course the Kennedys were like the royal family of America, mm-hmm. you know, they were the glamorous, you know, and to see them interacting with our royal family is fascinating. But I have a problem. I do have a problem with this genre, and which Peter Morgan is the king of it, without pun unintended.
Yeah.
Because, for example, in Frost Nixon, famously, because I was obsessed with that whole. So when David Frost interviewed President Richard Nixon on TV, it was a legendary series of interviews. Because in the end, Frost got under his skin, and he kind of exposed him being this ludicrous, corrupt figure. And he gave him enough rope to hang himself. That was a kind of famous situation. That was what happened in that story. In the film, the one scene that he totally invented was this scene quite late on where they speak on the phone the night before their final interview. And that didn't happen. And I remember reading about it and thinking,
feeling
the
cheated.
Best scene in the film is the one that didn't happen. And there's another film coming up soon about church called Darkest Hour, which Peter Morgan had anything to do with, where there's a brilliant scene in that. And I looked afterwards, I was like, did that happen? Didn't happen. And I have a problem with, if you can, for me, like, when you're correct, when the best scene's in it, you have no idea whether they happened or not. That does create an issue for me. So, and really, The Crown is full of it. I mean, The Crown is kind of like
the juicy
10
stuff
hours
is,
of it, really.
The juicy stuff is the stuff that you can't prove.
Yeah, it's all conjecture, like, yeah. So I do enjoy it. I enjoy it a lot, and I think, for me, the real brilliance of it is the performance. I think Claire Foy is incredible as the Queen. Like, she's got a voice down to a T. You know, it could almost be comical, couldn't it? Because she has to be so posh.
There is a fine line, isn't there, with somebody...
Yeah.
There is a fine line, but I think she does it very well.
She's not a caricature.
No, not a caricature. She's brilliant. I think Matt Smith does an incredible job as well, because he is a dick, as you said.
Yeah.
But you kind
bring
of...
bring that up again.
Especially late on. If you look at I was looking at some of the late episodes when he's being not very nice to poor Prince Charles, Prince Charles. And even then, you can kind of understand him a bit. I feel like I understand Prince Philip a bit more.
I have to say I do. Watching these first four, I just thought, oh, that's why he's so grumpy.
Although you're saying you understand him, but is that the real, like, you know, that's my frustration.
Yeah.
We know all his royal story now, but actually do.
But finally, I do want to say, and I know we mentioned already, for me, the whole thing is stolen by Vanessa Kirby's Princess Margaret. Because Princess Margaret is a rebellious figure. She's out till 4 a.m. partying.
Gets
and she's
up at
rubbing
11:30.
It. Yeah, obviously, she's rubbing it in the face of the Queen, because the Queen has to maintain this completely professional attitude constantly, whereas Margaret goes off and do what the hell she wants.
Yeah.
And I think that contrast is fascinating.
There is incredible lunch scene. Is that in your... that lunch scene
is
in the
great.
First episode is...
The kind of seething tension.
Fantastic.
Great. I think it's well worth watching, but let's do the star ratings. After witchering on quite a lot, let's face it, about The Crown.
Probably more than the Curzon app.
Than the Curzon app. Kay's looking at the time situation. You're outraged already.
Okay,
we're
going to
speed things up,
guy. Right.
I'm giving it 4 stars. Steph?
Yeah, I've done a 180 on The Crown.
Just
and
number.
I'm go
just
four
a number.
Stars. Sorry, four stars.
Four.
Sorry.
Boyd, what are you giving it?
4.
Great. Okay, quickly move on. What's up next, Boyd?
Well, in sharp contrast, as we like to say, it's a very Kardashian holiday. Can't say Christmas anymore, politically.
No,
I'm not going to be one of those idiots who says that.
You can say Christmas, but in America,
it's just
the
not
holidays.
The title of the show. Yeah,
it's
a
holidays.
Very Kardashian holiday. It is the annual, I believe, well, it's, you know, one of you two. I mean, I don't watch this programme.
Kay's the big Kardashian.
I watch this programme.
So am I right in thinking this is a traditional yearly event where they have a special festive episode of Keeping Up with Kardashians? Is that right?
It may be. I don't know. I don't really like.
Hold on.
No, I.
You're the expert.
I know.
Yeah, they
I
have
am.
A very Kardashian Christmas
every Christmas.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Fine. Then it is. It's an annual tradition. And this episode is basically about. I mean, it's just an excuse to show off, like, do you know what I mean? They all go out shopping for their Christmas decorations. It gets very competitive every year. Kim feels like everyone's been copying her decorations. Last year there was a big scandal because Courtney copied her lights.
Oh, believe me, yes, that is a big scandal.
There was, yeah, and there was a lot of talk about vibe stealing. Vibe stealing, yeah. Right? And yeah, it's just a whole episode dedicated to how they celebrate the holidays, which is obviously in incredibly ostentatious taste.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In a nutshell.
It's right. You've nutshelled it, wasn't it?
You've nutshelled it. Well, I mean, first of all, let me say, I don't know why I'm starting off like
I think you should.
On this thing. I have nothing against tawdry reality shows.
Okay.
Following talentless doofuses 24/7.
Okay.
It's fine. I have nothing against it. And
sounds it.
No. I'm a fan of, you know, like, I mean, I'm watching I'm a Celebrity at the moment. I love I'm a Celebrity. Yeah, it's brilliant.
It's still entertainment.
It's
lots
a reality
of people.
Show. It is entertainment. But I did. This is the first episode of Keeping Up with the Kardashians I've watched for years. No, it's not the first episode ever.
No, I'm saying it's not a good first episode for you to watch.
So what I'm saying is, I was kind of intrigued by how little content there was. So for me, this was, with ads, it's an hour-long show going out next Sunday on the E! Channel. It's also on the Hiyu app. You know the Hiyu app is like their...
Hiyu.
Hiyu. It's like the Curzon Cinema app.
It's like my mum called WhatsApp. What's up?
Brilliant. Yeah. I am like your mum. I'm probably older than your mum. Anyway, it is the Entertainment Channel's version of the Curzon app, in which you can watch reality TV anywhere.
The Curzon have got an app, you say?
Yeah, a week before that comes out on the actual E! Channel. So you can watch it from the 27th of November. Anyway, I was amazed by how it was 45 minutes, essentially, of Kim, Chloe and Chris talking about what each other were going to do, what decorations they were going to have up, and their Christmas vibe they were going for.
Vibe.
And stealing ideas from each other, and how outrageous it would be that they would steal ideas for each other for how they're going to decorate their houses and parties for Christmas. And that was it.
It was it.
I was like, where's Kanye? Where's the insight into...
Oh, Kanye's very rarely in it.
I know,
Kardashians.
But, you know, for me, that's the only
reason
to watch.
I'm annoyed that you watched this as your first...
You're annoyed that I watched
taste.
It?
No, as in because, like... No, I know, but as in, like, the regular episodes are, I feel, more, you know...
Substantial?
Juicy. They've got some bit more scandal, juicier, a bit more emotion. More.
Yeah. This did feel like a completely, like, a filler episode as someone who watches it regularly, so... And it was all a bit weirdly filmed, actually, like set to music. They never do that kind of crap. I don't know why it was a bit... But don't forget that Kris Jenner did get a nice rink.
And she did get Olympic ice skater Nancy Kerrigan to twirl around a 5x5 ice rink in the back garden of her Calabasas home.
Which is, I have to say, that's pretty impressive. Nancy Kerrigan was on with Tonya Harding, wasn't she?
Yeah.
You know, there's the film out soon.
Robbie. Oh, that's going to be immense. Right. But it made me... my overwhelming feeling about this is... Jesus, poor Nancy Kerrigan. Is this what it's come to?
I felt terrible for her. Yeah.
I have to say, Kate, I thought this was a terrible episode.
Yeah, it was. I'm agreeing with you. I'm not defending it.
I just thought it was incredibly shallow and horrendous.
Yeah.
I mean,
most of the episodes are shallow.
Yeah, but at least they have some emotion.
It's their USP. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
it was pretty incredible to see so little happening.
Nothing happened. Basically, North tells Nancy Kerrigan as she's skating off.
Oh yeah, so little North is Kim and Kanye's little kid.
She tells Olympic ice skater Nancy Kerrigan that she is the best skater on the ice.
Yes.
And then Chloe says,
"They all laugh."
They all go, "Whose child is that?" Which is probably my favourite bit.
That was the only good bit. Yeah. You've pinpointed the only literally the only interesting line of dialogue in these 46 minutes.
I wonder whose child
reality
that is.
TV was Lil North. Daughter of Kanye and Kim saying, "I'm the best skater," in a bratty way. And was it Chloe?
Chloe
says, observing Riley. We all know which sort of AI referencing Kanye's massive ego.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
That was it. That was the only interesting moment.
No, I think there was another interesting moment when they were going through the Christmas party list and they were going through all the famous people who are, because every year they have a Christmas party.
Yeah, okay.
Chris has a Christmas Eve party, and the list has got bigger and bigger and bigger. So they were going through, all of the family were sitting down, going through these names like Cindy Crawford, Joe Collins. They were slating people
culling
and taking
people.
Them off. Yeah.
Culling people from the list.
Oh, yeah.
Not literally killing them.
No.
And they were like crossing people off, like people, well known people who will hear about this. I thought it was very interesting.
You're right.
Tony Braxton's still on the list, thank God.
Joan Collins, it's not a party without Joan Collins.
When they say is, someone go, they go, Cindy Crawford, and they go, yeah, invite her. I'm like, what?
That was funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're, oh, you're right.
That's the two, those are the two bits. Yeah. Yeah. Now, yeah.
A preposterous bit was, you know, the whole Jonathan. So Jonathan is the best friend of Kim Kardashian, total filler for this episode. And when him and Chris decide to dress in disguises so they can go shopping, it's just obviously ridiculous. More so because the camera pans out and it shows that the whole shop's been shut down for them anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
we can't go shopping. But
Steph, I know how you hate contrived stuff. This is definition of contrived.
I think, as you've proved, I think even Kardashians fans are just going to be like, oh, this is rubbish. This is not very good.
Having said that, I still watched it.
To watch it. So you.
No, but I probably would have watched it.
Oh, okay.
It.
Of course you would have watched it. Yeah, fair enough.
Should we go straight to star ratings,
please,
boys?
God.
Well, I think you should go first.
Oh, I'm going to give it 1 star.
Oh,
God, boy, that is low.
You didn't have an Olympic skater in.
1.5.
Okay.
I'm giving it 3.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think I'm going to give it 2.5.
Cool.
Okay.
Excellent. Let's finally move on in even greater contrast. Now, yeah. I almost apologise. I was wishing to say, did I say when it was on? A very Kardashian holiday.
Yeah, do you remember Hey You? Hi You.
Oh, yeah. It's on, Hi You. It's on Hey Hi You on the 27th and on Actual E channel on the 3rd of December at 9 of the PM.
Yeah, maybe you can start a WhatsApp group about that with all your little friends.
I'm never talking on WhatsApp about the Kardashians, I can assure you of that. Deep breath. Huge tone change.
Huge tone change.
Because a one-off documentary is coming on to Channel 4 next Thursday, the 7th at 9 PM, called Catching a Killer, A Bullet Through the Window. Mm-hmm. Steph, what is this all about?
Okay, so this is
catnip for Steph.
Yeah, oh God, it was hard going though. So this is about a real life murder. It's following the local police in Milton Keynes. Basically, a poor young boy has been murdered. He's been shot through a window of a house, and it follows the murder investigation team who are trying to get to the bottom of who murdered this poor young boy, young Somalian boy, 19-year-old, and, yeah, what the process is of getting a conviction, if indeed they are going to get a conviction for his murder. It is pretty hard going, I thought. What did you guys think?
I thought hearing the 999 call was incredibly distressing, as was the interview with the poor boy's dad.
Yeah.
Who was kind of like, obviously, they interviewed him on the day that he had obviously found the news out that his son had died. And it was just so sad, you know, him talking about bringing his children from Somalia for a better life, safer life in the UK. And it was like horrendous.
I think, do you know what? You know how much I love American Murders and I love all that kind of stuff and I love...
You love programmes about American Murders.
I enjoy watching those kinds of shows. I enjoy watching Forensic Files. I enjoy watching all that kind of stuff. I found this really tough, which is just not like me at all, because I usually love... I don't know whether it was just because Milton Keynes is like 20 miles down the road from me, and I was like, this is all... And I just thought it was just unbearably tragic, this whole thing. The thing that really struck me about it is the police. It was the chief investigating officer. It was going to be his last case. He'd been a police officer for 30 years, and he said, this is the last case that I'm going to see... the conclusion to. And what I found really heartbreaking about it was they discover at some point through the investigation there's questions about whether there is links to organized crime with the people involved in this. And then he talks about how when certain things like that happen, a tragedy of a young man being killed, it doesn't get any press. Yeah. I mean, obviously, they've made a programme about this, so it has got a level of...
But it wasn't covered in the national papers.
Because they've just... The media had put that in a box of, this person's just involved in...
Because it was drug crime.
Well, they believed that it was...
Yeah, so this kid somehow kind of got involved with a bad crowd. I mean, a terrible crowd.
As lots of teenagers do.
He's a 19-year-old boy, and I guess the story was that... He was groomed, isn't he? At one point, there's a very good explanation by one of the detectives about how these people do groom young people to take their drugs and to deal drugs for them.
Become runners
and all of that. And this boy, tragically, he got involved. And he himself was a good boy. I thought, you know, and the family was incredibly decent, you know, lovely group of people. And I did feel that, because I don't know, you were kind of starting to say it there, that the title, so the reason we chose this, didn't we? Mm-hmm. Kay and I saw what was on TV this week, and we saw the title, Catching a Killer, Bullet Through the Window. And the way it's set up. There's quite a kind of, it feels like it is one of those American style true crime things.
Yeah.
But really, it's not really like that, is it? It's a really good documentary, but actually it's got a very strong message about, various ones. A, about how these kids can get involved with terrible people and end up dying. B, that why aren't these kind of crimes of interest to the media as at large? And basically, because it's you know, an ethnic minority being killed by another ethnic minority with drugs involved. So if it had been a white person, I think there's that issue, you know, and it's like, well, they're not interested. And the detectives are really brilliant, I think, in this film at the end by saying we should be listening more and paying more attention to these murders because they're awful. But it's not, even though that you do see the detection, don't you?
Right, this is my issue with it. I don't go into this, Pogs, okay, because I went into this thinking it was going to be one of your, I don't want to say standard, but your standard, a crime happens and then you are going to go along with the murder investigation team and you're going to pick up clues and it's going to take you through the title of it, Catching a Killer. It is not that at all. It is...
Well, it's part of that.
They do that.
It's part of that.
But it's not... Do you know what? I think the issue is it's not a sensationalist film. It's a very sober, rather downbeat, quite rightly, documentary. It's not unlike those American ones. I think that's the thing.
And I think I think it's okay to say they do find out who the perpetrator is, but it's highly unusual how they find out who it is. But it's not a case of they think they're going to have to go through this like you say the stages of detection. But what I found really incredibly interesting is the different emotional responses of the police officers investigating it. I thought that was incredibly powerful. Yep. It isn't actually your standard somebody murdered, go and find out who did it. And it isn't exactly as you say, it's not sensationalised. It is, it's really tragic and it makes you think afterwards. It really does.
Kay.
I don't watch a lot of
police
dramas.
You don't watch things like that, no.
So I found this fascinating. My brother-in-law's a police officer. I find this all very, completely fascinating how they even go about trying to find out who killed this poor boy.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting. But ultimately, I found it disappointing because... I felt like they really, the beginning was great, the middle, they brought a suspect in. There was potentially another suspect. It was all seeming like it was going really well, and then I realised, wait, there's 10 minutes left of the show.
Yeah.
And there was this big question over a second assailant and whether he was guilty of owning a gun, and fingerprints could have proved it, and this, that, and the other. And I thought, oh my god, okay, we're really getting into this now. We're going to find out,
Yeah, the nitty gritty.
That question wasn't even answered, and then it went straight to court, and we didn't even see in court. We just saw and then we just got a summary on the screen.
Pogs who are like me who like that kind of stuff. So there's a series on Netflix called The Confession Tapes, and that is all about you see all of the CCTV footage, you see the person being interviewed. It's all about how they get to the bottom of why and how that person did that crime. You see these people being interviewed. It isn't your traditional kind of...
My problem with it is, because I feel like it partly is that, because they partly do that. So they show you the witnesses, the suspects being interviewed, they're showing CCTV, they're doing this, so you're believing it is that kind of show and it's going in depth, and then it comes to an abrupt end.
I think they felt that they had a bigger message with this. Once they investigated it thoroughly, I think it's just...
But then surely you'd still... But you could have a bigger message and still show the depth that it was shown at the beginning and the middle.
Yeah.
But isn't the issue that... I know what you mean, but isn't it...
It's like they ran out of time.
No, I think the issue is they take it to... it comes to court when the trial arrives. Mm. And they can't film that, can they?
So no, but beforehand, there was a real moment where... It could be proven on fingerprints, right? And so you're like, one of these witnesses, one of the assailants has been accused of something. He's like, do the fingerprints test, do it.
Yeah.
He was really convincing. And you've been invested in this character and you're like this guy.
Right.
And then it comes to nothing and it's just summarised at the end by the court hearing.
Oh, okay. Maybe. I
don't know. I just found it unsatisfying in that respect. Mm. But I found it, obviously, it was very... Distressing.
It is distressing. It is upsetting. And I don't think... I would just say that I think people who, like me, generally watch Forensic Files and stuff like that, I don't think you're going to love this. I don't think you're going to think it's... I think you're going to not like it very much.
Oh. Okay.
I just think it's...
Slightly unfair. I think...
I know, I mean in the entertainment value. Go watch it.
Stand back from your true crime obsession.
Yeah.
And how much you like American Murders.
That's what I mean. It's a different type of
thing. Yeah,
it's
different, but it is what it is. It's yeah. a really, I think it's a thing as much about the family of the victim and the victim himself.
Yes.
And about right. how we should pay more attention to it as it is. Yeah, it's don't go expecting a true crime thing.
That's
different.
That's what I mean. I don't mean. Okay, it's still take well that worth back. Watching. It's not that you won't like it. It's not that you won't like it. It's not going to be what you expect it to be. Is all I'm saying.
Kay is literally. If we don't Furious. Give this a star rating in yeah. the next 10 seconds, I think she may implode.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying. So I'm going to give it, even despite all of your caveats. I thought it was a really interesting, moving, and with an important message documentary. So I'm going to give it 4 stars.
I'm giving it 3.5.
I am going to give it 3.
Fair enough. Catching a Killer, A Bullet Through the Window, is on Channel 4 next Thursday, the 7th of December, 2 days before my birthday, at 9 o'clock.
Is it your birthday, yes. What a hint. Yeah.
The Crown arrives one day before my birthday.
Okay.
On the 8th of December on the Netflix.
You said you don't want presents.
Is it a
right?
special birthday?
I don't like to talk about it.
Okay. Yeah. It's a special birthday.
It's especially in the extent that I'm really effing old.
No, yeah. you're not.
To that
not.
Extent, it is. Some would consider it special. I don't. Anyway, more importantly, it's that time. What time is it?
Question time.
Inspired by The Crown, starting on the day before my birthday, 8th of December. Well, I wondered what you thought your favourite TV or film royal was. It can be anyone. It can be a fictional royal. It can be a real royal. It can be an actor playing a royal. It can be a royal you've seen in a documentary. It can be whatever the hell you want, Kay.
Mine is Meghan Markle.
Right.
For real.
There's a good example.
For real life.
Oh, yeah. That's such a good one.
Because obviously we're recording this on Monday.
Earlier today.
Seen the engagement.
I sat there while what pictures. Can only describe as a gaggle.
Oh,
of
it's so exciting.
Staff. Gathered round the television, led by you and Kay, to watch 30 seconds of footage of, what's his name, Harry and Meghan.
Don't give it away.
No, I called him William. No, I genuinely nearly called him William because I am.
Okay, fine. Because I would say that you were looking at the pictures online by the time I got back to my desk.
So. Anyway, showing off her ring and all that. And yeah, it looked amazing. Yeah, so that happened today. So Meghan, yeah, she's a proper royal. That's allowed. What are you going for? Fictional?
I have got a lot of love for good old Zara Phillips, I have to say.
What?
I know that sounds shocking.
I think those words have never been uttered before.
No, I really like Zara Phillips. I do.
I'm not sure if she does count.
She does count.
Okay, I'm joking.
She does count. I really like Zara
Phillips.
Have
you ever Phillips. Seen her on TV? Or what? She?
She's an Olympian, thank you very much.
Right. Oh, didn't she win it? Yeah.
No, she didn't win it, but I think
you're not giving Zara Phillips enough credit.
Clearly. I'm going for, thank you very much for your answers. I'm going for Incognito Affair, which
Come
is
again?
The brilliant Danish film, A Royal Affair, which Ooh. Came out in 2012. It starred Mads Mikkelsen.
Oh, I love Mads Mikkelsen. Hannibal.
Alicia Vikander.
Oh.
Right. And it was set in the 18th century, and it's about the court of the mentally ill king, Christian the Seventh of Denmark, played by him. And his wife goes off, played by her, Alicia Vikander, and has an affair with the royal physician, Johann Friedrich Struensee. And it was based on fact, and it's a brilliant, brilliant film. It's one of the best films of 2012.
Do you know why I'm going to watch it? Based on fact.
Watch it, Kay. Yeah. And it's great. Like it has got, you have to read, as you would put it, it's a film you have to read. It's got subtitles. But it's honestly, it's one of the best films of 2012.
I do also think What's a Chops Who Plays Victoria is excellent.
Don't Judi Dench.
Jenna Louise.
Jenna Coleman, yeah.
Yeah. If we're talking about on TV,
Dame
Royals.
Dame Judi Dench traditionally plays Victoria.
A lot of people play Victoria, aren't they?
Mainly Dame Judi Dench.
Mainly Dame Judi Dench.
What about Helen Mirren? Is she not played
she
any Royals?
She played Elizabeth II, didn't she? In The Queen, which is also Peter Morgan, we should say. Mm. The film.
So many good ones.
Well, I think we've reached the end of our tethers.
Oh, God. Yes.
John is literally done. Put a fork in him, he's done.
I don't think there's anything more we can say about the Curzon film app. Thank you very much. We're back next week. It's a goodbye from me.
It's a goodbye from me.
Bye.